soccer, nonsense, and everything in between. Some Canadian guys talking about soccer.
All right, hello everyone, and thanks for listening to the Some Canadian Guys Talking About Soccer podcast, available at sportsnet.ca and on iTunes. This is Daniel Squizzato, a.k.a. Squiz, and I'm joined by my two fellow writers, fellow podcasters, and fellow Canadian guys. First, a man who can tell us whether there is anything finer than a week in North Carolina. He's my fellow writer at CanadianSoccerNews.com, Grant Surridge. Grant?
That's me.
How's it going?
Very good, thank you.
Terrific. I'm going to ask you to follow up on that North Carolina comment shortly, but before that...
Me first.
I'm going to introduce the other member of our troop here. He is a man whose intro I completely have blanked on now, and so I will just tell you that he is a soccer writer for Sportsnet.ca and senior editor at Sportsnet Magazine, where he is winning his NCAA March Madness pool, despite the fact that he has no knowledge of college basketball. That was going to be your intro, so you can play off of it now, because your name is Jamie Doyle. Jamie, how are you?
Woo! All right. Yeah, I'm doing well. I don't think I'm going to end up winning. I've looked at the brackets. I've looked at the people who are kind of on my tail, and... they, I think, have a better chance. I need some pretty big upsets that aren't going to happen.
Are you still in first place, though?
I am still in first place.
Which
and it's
is
like 50
is,
people in the
Which
in
is
the pool.
Why I bring this up, because, you know, as I said, you work, you know, Sportsnet Magazine, you would imagine that this is a wealth of sports knowledge, people that know all kinds
that.
Of things about the world of sports, and yet you, I'm going to imagine, just completely picked teams at random, and you are the one doing the best at this. Is this proof, definitively, that March Madness is a total crapshoot unworthy of our attention?
Yeah. No, not unworthy of our attention. It's a complete crapshoot, though. It's fun to bet on it. I mean, because it's basically just like, Gonzaga, what's that? Okay, Marquette, that doesn't even seem like, you know, that's a fancy French name. I don't know. It's in Minnesota or something. So you just kind of pick funny names, and you're like, I don't know where that is. I think they'll win. Whatever. The guys who actually know basketball and are, you know, the basketball writers and know what they're talking about are actually doing about the worst. They're in the very toward the bottom of the pool.
Is Michael is Michael Grange in this pool?
He's not, but our basketball writer Dave Zarum is in the pool and is flailing miserably about the bottom third. And they're the first to mention as soon as the thing starts, it's all out the window.
This has nothing to do whatsoever with soccer, but we will be talking about it eventually. We're going to be looking back at the Canadian under-23 men's team, which is currently in the midst of attempting to qualify for the Olympic Games, a 0-0 draw with El Salvador last night. Talk a little bit about that. Later on in the show, we'll be speaking to a Canadian who is definitely going to be going to the Olympics, midfielder Kaelin Kyle of the Canadian women's national team. They're training in Boston, getting ready for a friendly against Brazil on Saturday. We're going to talk to her about that and a number of other things. Even later on in the show, in promotion relegation, we will hit on such topics as meatheads, meat dresses, and meeting to sell weapons. And at the end of the show, we will be doing Taste the Trivia, where you, the listener, yes, you, unless you're ineligible, can win some Umbro swag, courtesy of course, Umbro. That's a bit redundant. And we celebrate a special anniversary towards the end of the show as well, so people should stay tuned to figure out what the hell I'm talking about there. But before any of that, Grant?
Yes.
I mentioned that you may have had some recent experience in North Carolina. This has a little bit to do with the fact that we're recording this show on Friday rather than Thursday. So
You waited for me. Thank you.
You are our resident globetrotter. What were you doing in North Carolina, and what kind of hijinks did you get up to?
Well, I mean, it's funny we're talking about the NCAA tournament because, well, you know, Jamie's sitting here in Toronto picking brackets.
Yeah.
I was down there living the dream.
You were playing in the tournament?
No, I was not. Yeah. I was watching it in loud, rowdy college sports bars.
Did you watch it?
But you weren't
it,
even at the game. You were like in a bar.
Well, you can't really, like, they don't, the games aren't, like, my brother goes to UNC, so I was down there visiting him.
Mm.
And UNC doesn't play anywhere near, well, actually they did. They were playing in Greensboro, North Carolina. But the way it was explained.
You don't play at home.
You don't play at home in the tournament. Anyway. No. So I was there. I don't know anything about basketball either. But interestingly, you talk about Gonzaga. So my brother's roommate is this huge Gonzaga fan.
Okay.
Yeah.
Grant.
I imagine you saw a UNC game.
I saw two.
Yeah,
right.
And they won. And also, But their big rivals, Duke, this is not basketball.
Yeah, and Duke lost,
which
right.
It must have been a humdinger.
They had shirts the next day. Duke, or what was it? Who beat them? Creighton or something? Creighton beat Duke.
Lehigh.
Sorry.
Which is a
Lehigh.
Right, I think it's a made-up
school. Lehigh beat Duke. You could buy it on the street in Chapel Hill the next day. Anyway, the most interesting thing that occurred to me the entire time I was down in the Carolinas, because I also went to South Carolina, is I was in the hotel room one day. You know, and bear in mind, I'm in a city, the city where the Civil War essentially started, the state that first seceded from the Union, mm-hmm. filled with history, with beautiful scenery, beautiful weather. The most interesting thing that happened to me while I was there is that I was sitting in the hotel room flipping through the channels, and I came across what I thought was some kind of Americanized version of the cult classic Canadian TV show Man Tracker. And I'm sitting there watching, and then it occurred to me, Jesus Christ, this is actually Man Tracker. Man Tracker is on television in the United States.
Grant, can you explain?
South Carolina.
Yeah, can you explain to the people who haven't had the joy of watching this what Man Tracker is?
Man Tracker is a show that every week they have two contestants will sort of go into the woods in Canada, and they start at point A, and they try to get to point B through the woods before Man Tracker and his like sidekick catch them.
On horseback.
Yeah. Man Tracker and his sidekick are always on horses, and he can't leave his horse is a very important part of the show.
And really? It's like miles.
No, he can't leave his horse. I've never seen him leave his horse.
What if he has to go to the bathroom?
Well, he's probably allowed to go to the bathroom. He's not allowed to catch them.
He's learned how to hold it for a long time.
And also, like, they have to go through, like 10 kilometers of God knows what, and brushland and mountains and
although
whatever.
Although once they did camp out in a golf course, so I'm kind of wondering. Anyway,
well, don't ruin it for us. Well,
no, I mean, I don't have to ruin it. You just watch the show and it's ruined. It's one of these sort
of fantastic.
It's one of these sort of CanCon things that is so silly that it's actually fairly entertaining to watch.
Mm-hmm. Man Tracker's always got that kind of like sun in the eye squint where he looks like, you know, like hardcore cowboy.
Yeah, he's definitely a hardcore cowboy. But yeah. But sitting there watching that, and it kind of occurred to me that this is finally proof that there is just too much television. There's too many television channels. If American TV is now resorting to like, oh crap, we got all this airtime, let's put Man Tracker on. There's too much TV.
Don't you think though it would have a bit of an audience in a place like South Carolina? I mean, you talked about the history and that sort of sense mm-hmm. of rugged individualism that kind of defines America as a whole, but especially the American South. And right. that's kind of what Man Tracker is all about. You're out in the wilderness in BC or Alberta or wherever. You're trying to find your way to where the producers told you had to go before this weird old man finds you on horseback.
But
isn't that the American
accompanying camera crews?
Yes,
beside you.
Yes,
I've always wondered that. How did they not just see the camera crew?
Yeah,
of course they saw the camera crew.
Man Tracker's trying to be all stealthy and skulk around, and the contestants can't see them. Meanwhile, there's boom mics just crashing through the underbrush on top of them.
I understand that completely. I just figured that, you know, they would have a souped up sort of American version of Man Tracker. With higher production values and better acting, and
lasers and rocket launchers,
jetpacks,
I don't know.
It takes place in space.
Apparently, they didn't. So,
considering we've lost the vast majority of the people who tuned in to listen to soccer, why don't we actually start talking about it for the benefit of the eight people who may still be listening?
I agree. Because
the show has the.
Well, we've gained a lot of Man Tracker fans. So.
Well, that's another eight people. We're up to 16. Good, good. Last night, Canada played its first game of 3 games in 5 days in the Olympic qualifying tournament, the U23 team. A 0-0 draw against El Salvador, which I don't think filled many fans with too much confidence. So, Jamie, I'm going to turn to you first on this. You said you had a chance to watch the game there.
I did.
What are you getting out of this game, the fact that Canada has 2 more games in the next 4 days coming out of this? How are things looking for them?
Pretty dire. They played like what they are, which is a collection of guys who haven't spent a lot of time together. Passing wasn't spot on. They didn't really get a grip on the midfield. The defense let El Salvador slice through them a bunch of times, and Canada was only saved by Mihail Mizevic, whose name I'm probably mispronouncing, but is the keeper who plays for FC Edmonton, who did very well and made a couple of key stops from kind of point blank range where he kept Canada in the game, and they really only got the draw because of him. But basically, it was not an encouraging result in any way. Canada's midfield just seemed to be, maybe it's a lack of experience. I mean, these are young guys, but they just always tried to do that extra thing and take the extra touch and make the more complicated pass or make the like obvious wrong pass. And the right pass seemed to be something they couldn't quite get a grip on.
Whoa, there we go.
Smacked my mic. That's how angry I am.
Squiz was so furious. Yeah, he slammed the microphone. I mean, I was able to watch from about the 55-minute mark. Mm-hmm. That's about when I got home. But, I mean, even for someone like myself who doesn't really know anything about tactics, it always seems to come back to the same sort of... They just never really looked like they were even close to creating... I mean, okay, they created one genuine scoring opportunity, I think, while I was watching. The guy who plays in Singapore, I believe.
Sharif Al-Masri.
Yeah, there was a few nice touches, and he shot it about 70 feet over the net. Yes. But, I mean, and it's, I don't know if it's a problem in their midfield. They don't have that creative guy who can, like, drive the offense and run the show. But it just, like, it's kind of... It's depressing to watch, right?
I mean, yeah.
And like you said, I mean, a big part of it also is... the lack of preparation and knowing each other.
Yeah, that's what I was going to mention, too. I mean, this is a team that it's not like the U-20 team or the U-17 team or the men's national team that gets together on a regular basis. This is a team that's assembled once every 4 years. Some of these guys have played together with various youth teams at different times. But for the most part, they've been together for the better part of 8 days in training camp. A number of players that would have been eligible for the team were not there. Ashton Morgan at TFC would have looked nice at left back, but was not released by the club. Of course, clubs are not obligated to release for this qualification tournament because it's not FIFA calendar dates. Adam Straith, who would have looked nice at right back, was not there, not released by his club. A number of other players, Janiel Hoylett, Kevin Aleman, who may have been part of the Canadian setup, were not there. And you saw a number of players, particularly on the back line, playing out of position. Russell Tybert was there at left back, based, I guess, on the fact that he played there a bit for Vancouver last year. Mm-hmm. Not really a natural left back. Matt Stinson from Toronto FC at right back, again, not, you know, usually plays more in the midfield, and that's why there was a bit of lack of cohesion on the back line. Nana Adekora wore the captain's armband. He's out of contract with San Jose right now. Hasn't played a competitive game in months. I mean, he went on trials in Europe for a little bit, but in terms of competitive games, this is probably the first one he's played since the end of the MLS season, unless he played games over in Europe. So that, I think, explains a little bit of what was going on back there. But, Jamie, is there anything, any positives to be taken out of this game as Canada goes up against the U.S., who we saw thrash Cuba 6-0 as well on Thursday night?
Well, you've got a goalie who is now brimming with confidence and is obviously in form. The only... Yeah, his distribution looked a bit wonky. He did a bunch of slicing the ball out of touch on his goal kicks. But apart from that, he looked more solid than you would expect from an under-23 goalie whose team is collapsing in front of him. and also Marcus Haber, who is obviously a kind of a bright light for a Canadian under-23 team. He's had time with the senior men's team. He plays at a pretty high level in the Scottish Premier League. And he looks physically, and I mentioned this last night on Twitter, but he looks physically like a men amongst boys out there. I mean, he's 6'3", and he's, you know, he's a well-built guy. And he, if the Canada could just get the ball to him, he could have just plowed right over the defenders.
But it's interesting you mentioned Haber, because I noticed a couple times he kind of got knocked off the ball. Like, the guy I was watching with, I sort of mentioned, you know, there's Haber, he's a beast. And he kind of said, yeah, but look how easily he's getting knocked off the ball. And yeah. it kind of got me thinking about when we interviewed him. I believe it was last week. Mm-hmm. I can't remember exactly. He was, you know, he's a very nice guy, right? Very pleasant, and maybe he needs to kind of become more aggressive, more of a dick.
Well, I don't know if that.
I mean, not to us when we interview him, but no, on the field.
I think part of it is that, I mean, he got very little service. So, I mean, the few times we did see him get the ball, it's not always going to work out,
right?
And he had to kind of. I noticed, especially towards the end of the game, he had to go deeper and deeper into midfield to just get the ball. I mean, he was plowing, well, he was, as they say, plowing a lone furrow up there up front for the first half and saw nothing of the ball. So I think he kind of came a bit out of position, and then there's only so much you can do. I like to think that if you can get the ball into him or into Randy Edwini-Bonsu, who kind of added a bit of a spark for Canada when he came in, he's got speed and he's got a bit of movement about him. But it seemed that midfield was a bit of a bog for Canada, where everything just got stuck.
Yeah, I think it's you look at the team that Tony Fonseca has brought. It's definitely a young team. I mean, it's been mentioned that there are only four players who were born in 1989, which is the upper age cutoff. A number of really young guys. One of the youngest guys on the team is Bryce Alderson, who we spoke to on this show a while ago. Another member of the Whitecaps system. He's 18 years old. And the way that he's usually utilized when he was with the U-17 team is as that cohesive force in the center of midfield, distributing the ball, keeping things under control. what happened, I think, against El Salvador is that he was neutralized to a large extent because the El Salvadorians were playing really physically against him. I mean, he's, you know, he's crafty with the ball, but he's not the biggest guy. I mean, you know, Haber, you mentioned Grant, is a big, tall guy. Alderson, not so much. There was a lot of physical play, and the referee, surprise, surprise, in CONCACAF, wasn't really calling much of anything unless the El Salvadorians fell down like they'd been shot. Then, you know, the whistle tended to come out. And so I think that I think may have been the genesis of a lot of the issues that the Canadian team was having. I mean, it's always tough when you put, you know, a guy like that, a young guy like that, in a competition like this. Maybe not his best game, but I think that the approach Fonseca has taken over the long term may bear some fruit, getting these younger guys into international competition. Even if this, you know, however this campaign ends up for the team, I think that you see a lot of the young guys like Alderson, like Samuel Piette, who didn't play on Thursday, but I'm sure we'll see him in the next two games, getting them this experience as they move up in the Canadian system. Is that, Grant, does that give you any hope out of what's coming out of this tournament so far? The idea that, if nothing else, the future foundations are being laid to some extent?
Yeah, sure. I mean,
sweet.
I was going to say that gives me hope. And I mean, despite the fact we can all agree that Canada didn't play well, they still, this result does not really, I mean, now it just becomes a matter of how they each, Canada and El Salvador, fare against, you know, the U.S. and Cuba, right? We can assume the U.S. is going to win probably the rest of its games. So it's not really, a win obviously would have been better, but it's not like, it's not a horrible result.
No, I mean, it doesn't take them out of the equation by any stretch, but, you know, 3 points are always better than one, especially in a very short tournament like this. I mentioned earlier, Jamie, Nana Adekora, captain, mm-hmm. wearing the captain's armband for the U23 team, out of contract with San Jose. Well, his rights are owned by San Jose right now, but he can't sign with another team under MLS's arcane rules. But Toronto FC, of course, finds itself in the position it's been in for the last 5 years, needing a new center back, especially with Torsten Frings out hurt. So I'm going to pose this to you, Toronto FC fan. From your perspective, should Toronto FC make a play to bring Nana Adekora back home?
I don't think so, no.
Okay.
I think, yeah, I mean, Nana Adekora a couple of years ago seemed, he had so much promise and he had a run of games and he played really well and he seemed like, you know, a legitimate, you know, he's a huge legitimate talent that was going to grow and grow, but he kind of fell off, and then something happened with him at TFC where he just got nowhere under Winter, and I don't see that remedying itself, and I don't think he's put in the kind of performance with the senior national team against Armenia and then with the U23s so far. I mean, one game in, he's really turning heads.
But I mean, are you saying he's hit his ceiling then?
No, I just think I think he needed a change of scenery out of Toronto to begin with, and I don't think that going back is the right move.
But he knows where all the good restaurants are and stuff.
He can always come back and eat and stuff, but I think it's just to play his professional career here might not be the best way to go.
Fair enough. Grant, I'm going to, yes. Unless you have anything to add about young Nana, as
nope,
he was
nothing,
often called.
Nothing about young Nana.
All right, then Rob, I'm gonna go something. You like to do the long ball segment occasionally, yes. Checking in on Canadians overseas. A couple of Canadian-born players have been having quite a run of things as of late when it comes to the goal-scoring category. Olivier Osien, mm-hmm. playing over in the 2 Bundesliga for Greuther Fürth, which I've mispronounced, I'm sure. Greuther Fürth.
He's my Aunt Greuther.
Isn't that Jamie's aunt?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't have an Aunt Greuther.
Everybody has an Aunt Greuther.
The team is now atop the 2 Bundesliga. He is now, I believe, tied atop the 2 Bundesliga scoring chart. So is Olivier Osien Canada's top striking option as we look ahead to World Cup qualifying this summer for the men's national team?
I'm just kind of so confused as to what exactly how they're going to arrange their striking options. I mean, I guess theoretically, but it's always the same sort of thing, right? These guys catch fire with their clubs, or they, you know, do really well with their clubs, and then when they start playing for Canada, they don't score. I mean, Osien hasn't really. I mean, I know he scored when we were in the last round of qualifying, right, against these like super minnows. I guess that's kind of doesn't really make a lot of sense, super minnow. But against
that sounds like a comic book that fish would read.
And yeah, well, his name is Olivier Osien. So
actually, I'm pretty sure it's Osien, and he'd get pissed off if you said that.
Come on, throw me a bone here.
I will do no such thing, Grant.
Okay, all right. But I mean, this is the issue, right? Like, it's great that he's scoring for his club, but will he be able to do that when he plays for Canada is always the question.
Well, another Canadian-born guy who's scoring a lot of goals these days and making a big impact for his club, and I know a lot of people are going to get angry about me bringing him up, but too bad. David Junior Hoilett.
Well, I mean, at least in this case, we don't have to debate whether or not he'll score for Canada, because you know, he hasn't actually said he's going to play for Canada yet.
So. Well, true enough. But,
makes our job easier.
But he does appear as though he is kind of single-handedly trying to keep Blackburn Rovers in the English Premier League. He has said that he's going to, you know, focus on his club career until there's some stability there before he makes any kind of international commitment. But let's say Blackburn stays up. And let's say that he's sitting over there looking at the kind of things that have been taking place in Canadian soccer over the last couple of weeks. Full house at the Rogers Centre, full house of the Big O, big raucous crowd at BC Place in Vancouver for the Whitecaps home opener. Could something like this have any... No, I mean, I'm asking seriously. I mean, could the kind of crowds and the kind of excitement being generated around the game in this country, could that have any effect, Jamie, do you think, on the decision-making process of a guy like Junior Hoylett, who's trying to figure out what his international future is going to be?
It certainly can't hurt. I mean, Canadian soccer getting better and getting bigger can't do anything to dissuade him from playing for Canada. And I heard a story, and this may be apocryphal, it may be so much hooey, but I'd like to believe it, and I'm going to share it anyways, is that during the Canada-Ecuador friendly that came before the last round of World Cup qualifying, that was at BMO Field, and it was a very good kind of Canadian crowd. It was a good game to watch. Terry Dunfield scored a hell of a goal. And it was just, you know, being in the Canadian crowd, there was a very nice atmosphere. And I've heard that Junior Hoylett, because this was in the summer after the EPL season, just happened to be there. I mean, his family's from Brampton, so he was in Toronto, showed up kind of unannounced at the game, and just before Terry Dunfield scored his kind of screamer of a goal, Hoylett just kind of popped up in and around the Canadian supporters section, and everything kicked off when Terry Dunfield scored, and it was a great atmosphere. And from what I heard, like, it was just kind of impressed that this actually does happen in Canada with the Canadian men's national team. So, to your point, I think, yeah, the more atmosphere, more people cheering definitely could help. And just the idea that he's coming and checking out the Canadian men's national team games and getting a positive experience out of it, it all seems to be good things, whether it's going to sway a decision.
How old is this guy right now?
22, 23.
I think 21 or 22.
20, yeah.
And you also have to kind of think that, I mean, I know he's still young, but I mean, this would represent for him, I think, a decent shot at getting into the World Cup. I mean, I know given the draw Canada has now, I mean, it's not a great shot, I suppose, but...
No, but I mean, and I understand...
A shot, you know, and the older he gets, right? I mean, he's going to be nowhere near over the hump the next cycle, the next go-around.
Yeah.
But, like, if he really wants to try to play in a World Cup, you'd have to think sooner or later he's just got to...
Yeah, I mean,
make up his mind.
Eventually, other guys are going to come along and steal the spot you think is waiting for you, if that's what he thinks. But I mean, on the other hand, you can kind of see his point where these guys have one shot, if that. It's kind of a one in a million shot for a human being to get a big fat Premier League soccer contract, and you don't want to do anything to kind of mess with it. So just let all kinds of sleeping dogs lie, get ink on paper, and then figure other things out. And I understand that, as frustrating as it is all Canadian fans to just sit back and watch nothing happen.
I'm realizing now, Jamie, you know, you mentioned that Hoylett, according to this story, made his way into BMO Field during that game. Also being from Toronto, he also knows where, you know, maybe he was just coming back for a good restaurant as well, and someone gave him bum directions, you know? Maybe he thought the CNE was on, he was just looking for those little donuts and got a bit lost.
Maybe he was after a Chip Buddy, which they have at BMO Field.
Do they still sell those?
Pulled pork hamburger things.
All right, now I'm getting hungry.
Yeah, it's lunchtime, really.
Yeah, well then, we'll move on to the next segment of the show. The Canadian women's national team currently in training camp down in Boston. They are playing a game against Brazil, a friendly, in Gillette Stadium on Saturday. They will then be traveling to Sweden for another week-long training camp, culminating in a friendly against Sweden next Saturday. To check in on those games and other matters as the team builds up to Olympic qualifying, we speak to midfielder Kaelin Kyle right after this. Joining us now on the line from Boston, Massachusetts, where she is training with the Canadian women's national team, midfielder Kaelin Kyle. Kaelin, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, you guys.
Well, thanks for joining us. We know you're on a busy schedule there in training camp, as you have been for a week with the team. John Herdman, the head coach, has been saying in recent months that he's really been wanting to push the team physically and see what their limits are when it comes to fitness and physicality. Is that a good way to summarize what you guys have been going through in the last week?
I mean, that's pretty much perfect. We got 10 days off at home, and I mean, it wasn't 10 days off. We were in the gym twice a day, and It's a lot of fitness, a lot of weight training, a lot of explosive work. So to say our bodies aren't sore, I would be lying. But, I mean, it's good. It's the perfect time to do it. I mean, we're training for a huge tournament coming up. So hopefully it'll be worth it.
Hey, Kaylin, so what are some of the team's priorities in playing against Brazil?
Priorities, I think, well, for one, obviously they have some fantastic players, some of the world's best. So obviously shutting down Marta will be a key for our game. She's a great player, but we also have one of the world's best too. So that's kind of nice. But obviously just being really compact defensively, not like they're really tricky players, so not diving in and basically just following our game plan. I mean, we don't want to change everything that we've been working on just to fit who we're playing. Obviously, we want to try some of our tactics on them. So, yeah, I won't tell you everything, but...
We promise not to tell Brazil.
We don't work for the Brazil coaching staff.
You won't send them a little game note on us?
No.
Okay.
Kaylin, you mentioned to Sportsnet a while ago that when you first met Herdman, he'd said something along the lines of your level of play right now isn't good enough to get you into this midfield, and he kind of had you scared. How do you feel about him now that you've had some time to work with him and get to know him?
I mean, I wasn't scared with him. I was just, obviously, I want to be on the national team. So to hear those words, the first time I've ever heard that, obviously that scared me, I think. So, but yeah, I mean, working with him and working with some of our assistant coaches and just working with some of the senior players and going over game footage, I think I've really improved both offensively and defensively. So I'm still in the midfield, so I think I've been doing an okay job. I haven't got kicked out yet. But, yeah, I mean, obviously there's lots of things to work on as a younger player. You're looking at players like Diana Matheson and Sophie Schmidt, and you want to emulate yourself like them. So obviously there's things that I bring to the team that they don't bring to the team, and we kind of just feed off each other, and we're kind of growing as individuals but together, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. And so it's less that you're actually physically afraid of John Herdman.
Yeah, I was never physically afraid of him.
Well,
I was
just, there goes that headline.
Yeah, no one wants to hear those words come out of someone's mouth.
No. So it's not that Herdman is just kind of terrifying this room full of women that he didn't really know at the time.
No, he's a fantastic coach. I mean, he's great, and he's definitely not terrifying at all.
you mentioned in there Diana Matheson, obviously a long time veteran of the team. She's still recovering from a surgery late last year. Big player in the midfield there. Her absence, though, has given a number of younger or newer players, including yourself and a number of others, a chance to get to maybe play different roles, get a bit more playing time. How has your role changed, if it has, in the last few months with the absence of Diana Matheson?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it sucks not having Dee here because she's a huge part of this team and a huge impact player, obviously, as you guys all know. So, but it has given us opportunity to get into big games. And, I mean, starting against France at our last tournament for me was huge for me, and just showing John that I can get thrown in those big games and I can be an impact and I can play a solid game. So it's been nice for me, obviously, with a player like that in camp. It's harder to get minutes and it's harder to get on the field. So it's been good for players like me and someone like Sophie Schmidt that's obviously always been a great player, but now she's getting full 90-minute games and she's been playing outstanding. So it's been nice in that aspect and kind of switching roles. Sometimes they need more attacking midfield, so he'll go with a completely different lineup, and then sometimes he needs a little bit more defensive, one more defensive than the other, depending who's playing on the right, who's playing on the left. So, yeah, it changes every game. I mean, we definitely don't have a set lineup in the midfield, which is nice. It's you're fighting for your position every practice, and when you're at home doing your home program, you're working as hard as you can because you know anyone can start in that role right now.
Kaylin, one of the things I remember Herdman mentioning is that he's very kind of goal-oriented and setting specific and achievable goals. So would he have the team setting goals for themselves for, like, say, what you want to achieve tomorrow personally?
Yeah, actually we have this program. It's just an IPP, so it's an individual evaluation performance sheet. And after every camp, we kind of go over it with one of our coaches on the team. And you set goals both attacking, defensively, at your home-based program, physical program. So you kind of tick those boxes off. And you rate yourself 1 to 9, either 9 being world-class or 1 being you should be back at home playing soccer. But it's been really good for us. You kind of it shows throughout camp. I mean, when you have these IPPs, it holds you accountable. I mean, if you're not ticking off the boxes, obviously you're not doing what you said that you wanted to be doing. So it really holds you accountable. So it's been nice for a player like me that's still really young. And sometimes I might get sidetracked, but I have the sheet to go back to and really focus on what I need to improve on in order to play at the international level against top teams like U.S., like Brazil, like Sweden. So,
well, I don't know if this is a really personal question, but what kind of goal would you have for yourself, say, attacking tomorrow?
For me, personally attacking, just trying to take players on. I find when I play Tier 1 teams, I kind of shy off a bit, whereas I know I have the skill to do it. I'm not afraid to do it. I mean, obviously, it's a little bit tougher playing against Tier 1 teams. So, yeah, that's definitely a goal for me, is just having that confidence to take players on like Marta, or take players on and get shots off on net, because I have a shot. I just don't use it. And when I do, I haven't really hit the target as of late. But, yeah, just I guess those are like my goals for tomorrow's game.
Well, if at first you don't succeed, try and try again, of course.
Exactly.
You've had a couple of travel stories as of late. One pretty good and one maybe not as good. So I'm going to get into the not as good one first, and then we'll get into the good one.
Okay.
I understand that you had a bit of an airport mix-up coming into training camp in Boston this week. Could you tell us what happened there?
Well, I was trying to be very responsible. So it was St. Paddy's Day Eve, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to stay in. I'm going to be responsible. I fly out tomorrow at 5. Well, I had to be at the airport at 4 a.m. in Saskatoon. So get to the airport with all my bags, and I'm half asleep, and I'm at the counter, and I give her my, passport, and they know me by first name there, because, as you know, it's not a very big airport. So she's searching for my name, and she kind of starts laughing, and I'm like, hey, what's so funny? And she's like, hold on a second, do you have, your card? I was like, yeah, for sure. So I gave her my card and starts laughing again. I'm like, hey, it's too early for jokes. What's going on? And she's like, well, Kaylin, you're not on the flight till tomorrow morning. And I was like, oh, my goodness. So I had to call my parents to come back and get me. And they weren't shocked, to say the least. And then, yeah, my teammates are giving it to me. So to say that wasn't unexpected, or expected, I guess, of me, you should say. But, yeah, I tend to do some kind of things like that.
So does that earn you some kind of brownie points or something? You're so keen, you actually showed up. You showed up a day early to go to training camp.
No, people are like, you're an idiot.
Well, that's the other way you could go with it.
I like the idea that the Saskatoon airport is just kind of like Cheers, you know? Kaylin walks in, there's a couple of people at the bar. Kaylin!
That's pretty much what it is. It's just a big party every time I go there. No, the people that check you in actually go to your gate and see you out, so it's kind of nice. And then customs, I think it's the same people when you come back in from America.
So the bartender's also the pilot.
I don't know if that'd be safe, but
spent St. Paddy's Day partying at the Saskatoon airport.
It's a good time. Check it out.
No better place. So that was the not-so-good travel story. You also had a better travel story a little earlier on this year. You're an ambassador for Right to Play, which is a very good Canadian charity. You had a chance to travel to Liberia. Could you just quickly tell us a little bit about that trip and what you got to do over there?
Well, do you have 2 hours?
Well, no, we have about 2 minutes.
No, actually, so I was very lucky to go with Right to Play, and I took 3 girls off my team. And, yeah, we flew over there, and to say, I honestly didn't really know what I was going to expect. I didn't watch any documentaries before I went over there. I just really wanted to take it in myself, and I mean, as soon as we touched down, I got off the plane, I was like, oh, man, what am I in for? It was, you have to kind of see pictures, but basically what we got to do is go into communities and see these leaders of these communities that basically teach kids about life through sport. So they'll have games, and they'll teach them about AIDS through games, or teach them about clean drinking water through games. So it was pretty cool to see volunteers in the community doing it without getting paid, but just really wanting to change their community in order for these kids to grow up in a safe environment. So for me, it was really eye-opening and really touching, and it really showed how fortunate I was to be able to travel around the world and play soccer for a job. And it kind of brought me back a little bit, because I think I definitely took things for granted. I mean, I'd complain about living out of a suitcase, but they don't have houses to live in, you know? So, it was really eye-opening, and I'm truly, really, really lucky to work with an organization like that and been able to go out into the field and experience that firsthand, and it's definitely something I won't forget.
It's a very inspiring story. Just very quickly, Kaylin, the team is going to get a chance to play a game on home soil in Canada in the run-up to the Olympics in Moncton on May 30th. Mm-hmm. Just very quickly, how do you feel about the opportunity to play in a city where the women's national team hasn't played before?
I'm actually really excited. I've never been there, so it's a great opportunity. And just to have a game on home soil again, I mean, we did have our qualification tournament, but you just see all the fan support getting behind us and the messages of support on Twitter, email, and it's a really cool feeling, and it's awesome putting your Canadian jersey on home soil. So I'm really excited to get out to Moncton and see all the fans out there and see all the support out east.
That has been Canadian Women's National Team midfielder Kaylin Kyle. Kaylin, good luck tomorrow and for the rest of the year, and thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Perfect. Thank you so much for having me, guys.
That brings us to the part of the show that we like to call promotion relegation. You may not like calling it that, but too bad. We named it, so that's what it is. Each of us picks a story we like to promote and a story we don't like to relegate. So, Grant,
yes,
as per custom, I will ask you this week, who or what would you like to promote?
I'm gonna throw out kind of an ironic promotion.
Whoa, that's so cool.
I know it's hipster-like. I'm gonna ironically promote Dana White, the guy from UFC, who said this week that, in his opinion, soccer is the least talented sport on earth. I'm not sure that's grammatically correct, but yeah. I think what he means is that you don't need a lot of talent to play soccer. And, I mean, to me, this sounds like something you would have, I don't know, to me it seems like so 1998. It just seems like some North American meathead bashing soccer it's almost like a parody of itself now. I think we shouldn't even dignify it with a response, even though I'm doing that
it's
right
a,
now.
It's an ironic
dignifying
response.
It right now.
Because,
yeah, exactly.
Because we're the ones that confer dignity on others.
Exactly.
That's what we're here to do. Also,
fountain of dignity.
When you say North American meathead, you know, if there is this graphic dictionary that people always refer to, I'm pretty sure Dana White's face pops up there. Didn't he have something like, I think I read the same story. He said, yeah, you know, little kids can run around and kick the ball, so it doesn't take any skill or something like that.
I think he said, three-year-olds can play it.
Yeah. You know what else 3-year-olds can do? Roll around and hug each other.
Yeah, 3-year-olds can fight. I remember fighting as around 3 years old. You know, you just don't do it very well, like playing soccer, like playing anything, really.
I'd rather we not compare anything we were doing at age 3 to what we're doing now.
And the one thing I'll also mention in response to Grant's ironic promotion is that he's also, I think Brazil is like the market that UFC is trying to move into, and
they're
trying to predict that it's going to be bigger than soccer in Brazil in a matter of like 4 years. And I don't think that that's the way to go about it. But saying, hey, you should play this sport. You know why? Because the sport you've loved for your entire life
is
terrible.
Crappy.
I almost swore there for the first time
on
the show.
Well, Dana White would have sworn, so.
He would have.
Yeah. I think
he probably would have punched us.
He was doing an interview. He was announcing that there was a UFC event coming to Calgary, and talking about whether or not they'd come to Vancouver. And he's like, "Well, you know, UFC fans don't riot." So I guess he's not really good at building bridges when it comes to opening up new communities and new fan bases and things like that. All of this being said, if Dana White or anybody who's affiliated with the UFC is listening, you're probably full of a lot of muscles and could kick our asses. So,
yeah, I was really hoping, I was assuming they wouldn't be listening.
It's
when I
all
said that.
Ironic. Yeah. It's okay. Jamie,
to get us
off of that, who or what would you like to promote?
I'm promoting, not even with a hint of irony, although with a hint of Homerism, Thierry Henry. Obviously, I'm an Arsenal fan, and this shouldn't come as much of a surprise, but I'm promoting him. He could play for any team in the world, and I would promote him.
Tottenham.
But he wouldn't. He wouldn't be Thierry Henry if he played for Tottenham. He flew, in response to, obviously, the very nearly fatal medical emergency. I don't know why I talked myself into a corner there, but what happened to Fabrice Muamba, Thierry Henry, who will have known him from Fabrice Muamba's time at Arsenal, when Thierry Henry was still with the team, Henri went to visit him after a game in Salt Lake City. He flew 5,000 miles to London to spend about an hour with Muamba, as I've read, and then flew back to New York. And that just seems like straight-up good guy behavior all the way.
I got nothing to add there.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's good guy behavior.
You can't
definitely
argue with that.
No.
All right. Well, then I'm going to continue in the same uplifting Muamba-related vein. I mean, of course, everybody has heard plenty about the story by now. This is the first chance we're getting to address it. You know, Bolton midfielder Fabrice Muamba, cardiac arrest on the field at White Hart Lane last weekend. The promotion I'm going to be giving out of this is to the people, the officials, and the medical staff that were there on scene at the time, including referee Howard Webb. Webb was, of course, the official in the middle for the final of the 2010 World Cup. Got quite a bit of stick for that. The game got a little bit out of hand. But seeing him in the middle there during that completely unexpected and largely unprecedented incident with Muamba, handled it very well, got everything under control with the players and the managers, spoke to them, went about things in a professional manner, made the right decision to abandon the match. And, of course, people look at it after the fact, and I think pretty much everyone would agree that that was the right decision. But he didn't have the benefit at the time of hindsight or the bigger picture. He was there in the moment on the field in the middle of a match saying, what's going to happen here? This is not something we're ready for. He made that judgment call. And for him making that judgment call, and of course, for all of the medical staff, including I think there was a guy who was a doctor in the stands who just jumped onto the field and helped out with the...
There may be, yeah. And there was also Bolton's team doctor who ran out there and did a lot of what ended up being life-saving work.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of you know, obviously the incident itself is horrible, but there are good... good things to be taken out of the reaction of a lot of people. The fact that Fabrice Muamba, from what we're hearing and reading, seems to be on the mend. He's obviously, you know, got quite a road to recovery ahead of him. But to Howard Webb, the officials, the medical staff who were there on the scene, kept the young man alive and prevented.
Actually, they didn't technically. He was dead for 78 minutes in a very technical sense. So you have to credit whoever it is that's responsible, as you are, all the various people who are responsible for essentially bringing a man back to life after being dead for over an hour.
That, if anything was ever worthy of a promotion, I'd say that that's worthy
exactly,
of a promotion.
Yeah.
So, promoting those folks. Grant?
Yes?
Who or what would you like to relegate?
I'm going
to
relegate some hairstyles.
And here we now we're back in our
and
wheelhouse.
And scene. All right, yep. Let's go.
Two guys now, and of course I'm going to mispronounce these names. Juan Agudelo.
Agudelo.
Yes. And Breck Shea?
Yes.
Okay. Two forwards.
There are eight total letters in his name.
I know. I think you just overthink names.
Yeah, the opportunities.
You've got me overthinking. This is what it's come to.
But now that you're overthinking, you seem to be doing pretty well.
Okay, well, I'll keep overthinking.
So then, who were those players again?
Breck Shea.
Yeah.
And Juan Agudelo.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm relegating their hairstyles because they're both sort of sporting mohawks last night. Actually, Shea, I'm not sure would you call it a mohawk?
It's hard to say. It changes kind of day by day in color and shape and consistency.
They both seem to change in that way. And I mean, I guess, hey.
Jamie, that description was horribly precise.
Yeah.
My brain went to a bad place. Grant, continue.
Okay. I got to keep my brain from also going to that place. Yeah, I mean, I suppose if the kids like it, it's okay, but it's just not, from a personal sort of style point of view, I'm not a big fan of the Mohawks. It's kind of like Neymar, but worse, I think, somehow.
Well, Neymar is, I mean, and considered to be the next future star of a massive soccer country like Brazil. I mean, Agudelo and Shea, they're both sort of up-and-coming stars with the U.S., but that, I mean, those hairstyles are a bit presumptuous.
Yeah, it's like the guy who wears the electric pink boots and is terribly slow and not very good. You can't get away. You have to be really good to get away with something that's obviously.
I hadn't even thought of it that way. I was just thinking, just in terms of, I just don't like the haircut, really.
Yeah, just on a human level.
Yeah, it's just not.
Grant, I'm thinking of you now, like Grandpa Simpson,
with a
mohawk? Like Grandpa Simpson in that flashback where he's watching Super Bowl III and his wife is sort of fawning over Joe Namath and his long flowing locks and. And he says, look at that hippie. Look at Johnny Unitas. Now there's a haircut you could set your watch to. Essentially, you're curmudgeonly old Grandpa Simpson.
Or Grant's going to end up yelling at Juan Agudelo, shave those sideburns. And he's just got it shaved up from his ears to the top of his head. And
I still like
him better than Bruce Arena.
Yikes.
Grant definitely knows what sideburns are, as I can tell from looking at the side of his head.
If it was sideburns, that's an entirely different story.
Grant, you bring up your own, I know this is going off track a bit, but you mentioned your own style proclivities. Have you seen the new Team Great Britain jerseys that they're going to be wearing at the Olympics?
I have. No, I'm not a fan of those either.
No?
A bit too much color and not enough pattern. I don't know if that makes any sense. They're just sort of all over the map.
Yeah, it's just like the flag in wrong colors in a weirdly like zoomed in kind of fashion.
Yeah. I think it looks a little bit silly myself. Surprisingly, my girlfriend took a look at it and quite liked it. The skin-tight model.
The other thing.
Yeah, well,
looking at the jersey or jacket?
Yeah, oh, all right.
He's looking at a skin-tight model. I mean,
wait, the model's skin-tight? Everyone's skin-tight. I mean, hopefully if your skin's really loose.
Then you've got more problems than what
Grandpa
you wear.
Simpson.
If your skin's not fitting you properly, you probably shouldn't be a model.
Like Grandpa Simpson.
Exactly. No, but they obviously you make these things like ostensibly so that the team can be recognized on the field, but really it's to sell them to people. And how many people are going to go out and buy a skin-tight shirt, basically?
I don't know.
I mean, just make it baggy so that the average human being can wear it.
That's what the kids like these days.
Because, I mean, most people, they put that thing on, and, like, up the gut and whatnot is going to get sucked in. It's going to start squirting out in weird places. It's up through the neck hole and out the arms.
Yeah,
just...
I mean, not to fall into classic stereotypes, but when you think of your average English soccer fan,
yeah,
that's skin-tight jersey is
do
not going to
do. Do they make a quintuple XL?
We'll find out soon enough. Jamie?
Yeah.
Who or what would you like to relegate?
I'm going to go ahead and relegate Syria.
I think that's kind of happening regardless of your input.
Relegated around the world.
It's relegating itself. No, this is fairly oldish, but it's still definitely worth a mention. Syrian TV has decided, or at least somebody on Syrian state TV has decided that Barcelona is working for the rebels, which sounds like a very, you know, Empire Strikes Back kind of way to approach things. But they've discovered through their, you know, I don't know, various sources that Barcelona's formations on the field are actually a code.
Ooh.
It's a pattern that relates directly to delivering arms supplies and escape routes and whatnot to Syrian rebels in certain very specific areas of Syria that I'm sure no one on the Barcelona team has ever even heard of. And Squiz, you mentioned this before we started. It implies a high level of collusion from the other team who's going to allow them to get in the specific, you know, to scale geographic locations of this city and this town and this mountain pass, which would be amazing. But it's also complete horse hockey.
Horse hockey?
Horse hockey.
How did this person, like, where did this come from? How did he arrive at this conclusion?
I don't really, probably through a little bit of paranoia. I don't think that there's any actual. It's just
wild
kind of
delusion.
Lightning had a dream or something.
Jamie, I like how you're scrolling online right now to see if you can find the source for like where this information came. I'm going to guess that anything coming out of the Syrian regime at this point is a big old citation needed.
So was it some kind of message like don't watch Barcelona on TV, or it was just sort of?
I think this
is what's happening. Everybody, be aware of it.
You know what? I don't want to read too deeply into the motivations behind all this, but basically. I think we can all see it for what it is, hilarious craziness.
Isn't this pretty bad propaganda as well? I mean, if they're saying that it's don't watch Barcelona play because they're showing all these routes for the rebels to deliver weapons, and then they show the game superimposed over a map of Syria on their own station, aren't they kind of undermining their own point?
Even the less clever of the rebels will be like, oh, that's where it is. All right. Because I thought Xavi was supposed to be, but he's, yep, no.
Uh-huh.
All right, we've got to take a left here.
Ah, so Iniesta is the arms depot.
Messi is, I don't know. I had nowhere to go with that one.
Busquets is the surplus, you know, Kazakh warheads. I don't know what the hell I'm talking
about.
Yeah, see,
now we've drifted too far.
You know, when you go to Kazakh warheads, it's time to move on to the next relegation. Yeah.
All right, I'm now going to rewatch that all of Messi's goals in 14 minutes clip and see if I can surmise any sort of geopolitical plans.
It'll be like looking into Nostradamus' brain.
How to invade Russia in the winter.
Yeah.
I'm going to relegate. Nothing to do with war policy. I'm going to relegate Lady Gaga. Of course, very, very famous pop star. Anyone listening to this is almost certainly aware of who she is, even if you don't know her.
Wait, what is this Lady Gaga of which you speak?
It's, well, Grant,
why would I mispronounce it?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm like, Lady Gaga.
Yeah.
I believe she plays in the Indian Premier League. Apparently, Lady Gaga was on some show with Oprah Winfrey, one of the 55 shows she has earlier this week. And talked about the fact that she's looking forward to being a mom, which is, of course, a nice, wonderful thing. She's a celebrity.
So far, so good.
Yeah, those kids will have a great upbringing. But anyway, but the quote that irks me is, I want kids. I want a soccer team. And I want a husband. Well, I'm being superfluous. I don't want to have one kid. I want to have a few. You know, all of that other than the soccer team thing, I have no problem with, except for her misuse of the word superfluous. But a couple of things in there. Number one, I think she's underestimating how many players are on a soccer team. Does she mean, like, she wants 11 kids? Does she want a full, you know, 18-player roster? Does she want a full 30-player roster? If so, she should probably get started pretty soon because she's 20.
Is she going to need a reserve team as well?
Oh, boy.
Is she going to youth academy?
Start a whole academy?
Yeah, medical staff.
And the... Well, yeah, certainly.
She definitely will need a medical staff.
Probably has medical staff already.
She's got everything that she needs. And the other part of this that irks me, and it probably irks me because I read not too long ago a pretty good story written by American soccer writer Jason Davis over at Run of Play about the etymology and the social impact of the phrase soccer mom and the way that it has served to help keep the sport on the fringes of the North American consciousness and has led people to kind of think about it in a very certain restrictive way as this pastime that, you know, bored, suburban, upper-middle-class moms use to just keep their kids busy rather than something that's actually worthy of following on the domestic shores. And so I was just thinking about this, and I'm like, wow, Lady Gaga is essentially the strangest possible public figure that you could think of. And now she's hitching her bandwagon to the soccer mom.
She's going
to
be a soccer mom.
The soccer mom trolley, too. This is not doing the sport any favors.
Yeah, you mentioned soccer mom trolley having gone kind of off the rails. I'm going to read you a headline right here. No bail reduction for New York's soccer mom madam.
What? Right.
This is a woman accused of running a multi-million dollar brothel out of her Manhattan apartment. And for no evident soccer-related reason, apart from the fact that I think she might be, you know, older than 30, she is known as a soccer mom madam.
Are all people over 30 known as soccer mom madams?
I think it's just basically that it's like wealthy... For some reason, my stereotypical image of the person that has now become known as a soccer mom would be like a wealthy-ish kind of upper-middle-class white woman.
Hey, that's Lady Gaga. Except
I don't think she's... I think
she's
above
upper...
upper. Yeah.
She's
I don't think your average soccer,
upper class.
Soccer mom madams don't generally wear clothes made out of meat.
So wait a minute, hold on a second. So what's a NASCAR dad?
The father who tries to raise his children in the infield at Talladega.
The kind of guy who shouldn't try to wear a Team Great Britain soccer kit.
Yeah, exactly.
That is going to bring us to the end of the regular promotion relegation segment, but last week we introduced a new idea, the idea that we could do a group promotion, something that the three of us could all throw a support behind, and given the date on the calendar, I think it is completely apt for us to do another one of those. We started doing this show under the Sportsnet banner, I think in November of 2011. A lot of people have started listening to the show since then. Thank you for coming aboard. But you may have been a bit confused when we've made references to previous incarnations of the show. What you may not know is that we started the show on March 22nd, 2009, was the date of our first episode. Went up on our original site, then we moved over to Canadian Soccer News, and now we've, you know, we're kind of doing a million different things. But we figured that a day after our third birthday, we would remind ourselves and remind maybe the two people listening who may have actually heard this the first time around.
Hi, Mom.
Hi, Jamie's mom and Jamie's sister.
And Lord Bob.
My sister never listened.
And Lord Bob.
Yeah.
You know, remind folks, give them a little bit of a chuckle, and give the rest of the people listening a bit of a chuckle as well. So this is the opening segment from our very first show, which originally went on the internet March 22nd, 2009. You probably won't, but we hope you enjoy it.
I wonder whether Stephen Gerrard secretly sitting in his bath.
Look at these seats! Just look at these seats!
Episode of the Some Canadian Guys Talking About Soccer podcast.
I'm Dana Foxhole with you.
Well, Grant, that being said, I'm glad you just put deodorant on as you did, because our working conditions here are less than ideal.
You're telling me. I thought we promised not to talk about each other's foxholes for at least the first few podcasts.
Okay. I would have been happy if we could have waited a few minutes, but...
All right, continue with the intervention.
All right. Anyway, if you're familiar with our website, some Canadian guys writing about soccer at www.canadiansoccerblog.ca, then you probably knew this is what you should have expected. By way of introduction, I am the one they call Squiz. I am, of course, here with my two co-writers. First, we've got Jamie. Jamie.
Hey, how you doing?
Very creative.
Thank you.
And we've also got Grant.
Hi, how are you doing?
Now, Grant, the microphone's not a person. Waving at it doesn't accomplish anything.
I'm waving to the listeners.
I've also realized that they can't really answer, so it's a stupid question to ask.
You make a very valid point.
Wow, what a ride we've had since then.
I've got a suggestion.
Yeah.
We got to change this to a group relegation. Because I can't promote that. It's less than stellar.
Well, now, wait a minute. I mean, a lot of things have changed. We're no longer in Grant's bedroom, but a lot of things have stayed the same. Grant still thinks that the microphone is
a person,
something that can be communicated with in nonverbal ways.
Earlier you mentioned something, and you did, when you said ironic hipster, you did a bit of a dance.
No, you did kind of like a...
kind of shimmied a little
You did like
bit.
A Skrillex double, double turntable sort of thing.
Well, I mean...
Grant, can you identify all of those elements from that opening bit that we had there?
Okay, there was, I mean, I'm going to have to remember it now, but there was the Middlesbrough when they went on that massive run in the UEFA Cup. That must have been, what, 5 years ago? Something
like that. Come back against Stal
Bucharest.
The
disappointing thing about that part is there's also, if you watch that same YouTube clip, there's a part in there where the announcer actually squeals. You don't often hear a grown man squeal in excitement, but if you can find this on, maybe I'll post it on Twitter or something. It is absolutely hilarious.
Now, when you say squeal, you don't mean squeal like a pig. You mean
We're not talking Deliverance here. This is like a squeal of unadulterated joy.
Yeah, it's completely. He's powerless to resist this noise of delight that comes out of his mouth. Yeah,
powerless to resist the noise of delight.
Yeah, it's completely involuntary.
It comes out of his mouth.
Anything else, Grant?
Okay, so we had the Middlesbrough. Let's see. We have this all time and time again. It always happens to Canada.
Yep.
I believe that was 2007 Gold Cup.
Yeah, Jerry Dobson, Craig
Forrest.
Craig Forrest said a number of other things. He was very angry. Yeah. As we all.
Oh yeah, I think the first one was Steven Gerrard when he scored. It was in the Champions League. I can't remember against who. I think it was a Greek team. And just sort of their ITV did a special afterwards about the 50 greatest Champions League goals. And this guy was describing how Gerrard afterwards is sort of sitting in his bed. Like, he presumed that he could imagine Gerrard was, you know, what Gerrard would be thinking while he was in his bath.
Yeah, we kind of cut
Even
it off
the fact
there.
He would be having a bath.
Painted an upsetting picture.
It was way too intimate.
It kind of went on. Like, I picture Steven Gerrard in his bath looking over those goals in his mind. It's like, well, I don't want to think about Gerrard in his bath.
With a nice raspberry Zinfandel and maybe some bubbles and some Yanni playing.
And there was a Spanish one, too, right? I can't place that one.
Jamie?
I don't know.
Eddie Sabrango scoring at the Big O against Santos Laguna, 2009. Okay. I don't know why there was Spanish commentary, but
they were playing a Mexican team.
Well, because, you know, it's not as exciting as the elongated Spanish yelling. And because it kind of fits, you know, we had 58,000 at the Big O last week. Eddie Sabrango is still sort of on the Impact's lineup. What was the other one? I forget, too. Robbie Keane.
Oh yeah, look at these scenes. 2002 World Cup, Ireland when they I think they beat Germany or how did they?
I think it was like a last minute draw against Germany.
Right. Yeah. Look at these scenes.
Yeah, and he now he's on MLS's shores, so it seems again, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Jamie, any kind of birthday wishes you want to send to us as a group, memories that brings back for you?
No. Well, you mentioned the Robbie Keane thing, but I remember watching that goal and for some reason just because it was early in the morning, I got really excited and I jumped off a balcony.
Wow. What?
Yeah, the first floor.
No, okay.
But still, I jumped off a balcony and I kind of ran around.
Where were you?
I was at home.
Excuse me.
I was at home.
pardon me, sir.
I was at home in Waterloo and I was in university, so
that explains everything.
Yeah, so
I was either up, hungover, or hadn't gone to bed yet.
So from the stories you've told us, that was probably the eighth dumbest thing you did that day.
I got thrown off that balcony once and very nearly died. But
what?
Yeah, you know, it's a balcony full of stories. Anyways, happy birthday to all of us.
Just going to leave that one as a long-term teaser then.
Indeed.
Well, happy birthday to us, and thanks to everybody who has been listening for this very long time, and thanks for everyone who started listening, and thanks to the people that haven't started listening yet, and they don't even know it because they're not listening. But you
preemptive
know,
thanks.
It's good for them to exist.
That's good
nonetheless.
Policy. That's good policy right there.
That's my way of reaching out to the people that are listening. Another way that we do that is, of course, Taste the Trivia, our weekly trivia challenge, where not only the answers but the questions as well are provided by you, the listeners.
And people won't know this, but I'm getting much better at mailing these things out, so you can rest very much assured that you're going to get it.
I'm getting better at doing the intro there. Jamie's getting better at writing
down
address.
I assumed everyone just assumed they were going to get it, but now you know. I know how to do the mailing. I know how to give it to the secretary with all the right things filled out on the form, and it actually gets sent out.
We're a well-oiled machine.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it dispels the myth that we have some big, you know, diamond-encrusted studio where we just have underlings doing work for us. It's really just the three of us making this up as we go along.
I'd like to dispel the myth that you just...
Diamond-encrusted studio.
The myth that you just put out there, we're a well-oiled anything. I'd like to stop that before the ball gets
That's
rolling.
How we're going to fit into those... Great Britain shirts.
Yeah, no. Our diamond-encrusted Great Britain shirts.
Oil ourselves up and get those shirts on.
God.
I can't wait for the Olympics. Anyway, Taste the Trivia. Last week, the question was, which two goalkeepers played for Canada in the 1986 World Cup? The answer was Paul Dolan and Tino Lettieri. The correct answer was given to us by Seth Greenan, who has given us the correct, well, not the correct answer, but the question. I always screw something up there.
He's given us the correct question.
He's given us the correct question because it's up to him. For this week's Taste the Trivia, which is... Where did the first Canadian women's national team camp open? In which city did the first Canadian women's national team camp open?
That's a good question.
It is a good question. If you have the answer to that question, and it's the right answer, head over to our Facebook page at facebook.com/somecanadianguys. If you're the first one to provide the correct answer, you will be the beneficiary of some...
We will be the benefactors.
You will benefit.
You'll get... some stuff from Umbro that Jamie is going to put in the mail, and it's going to go to your house, and you're going to say, this is awesome, or you may not. But
it's not
going
to go in the mail. We're shipping it.
Ooh.
So you might have to be there to sign for it.
Yeah. As a result of those courier costs, we don't get groceries this week. So,
and if you win, stay home, at least until you get it.
Yeah. Just don't get out of the house because we can't pay to have it reshipped.
That's right.
So, yeah, you can head over to our Facebook page. You can also find out what we are writing this week, Jamie.
Mm.
You write stuff for Sportsnet. What have you got on the pipes?
Well, right now, actually...
Of your well-oiled machine.
Oh, that's... What a horrible thing. I'm not going to dignify that with a response. We've got a brand new issue of Sportsnet magazine, though, on the stands
you
as of yesterday.
You always have a new issue.
Yeah, every 2 weeks there's a new one.
Yeah.
It's good. It's a general sports kind of thing. It's not too much soccer in this one. But God, is it ever good.
Boy, oh boy. Grand.
Do you have any U23 stuff in there? Olympic qualifying tournament stuff?
No.
Okay.
Sadly.
Okay.
Grant, that's why people listen to what we have to say.
No, I know, but I just thought...
Well, you just ruined it.
I thought you might have cross-platformed that.
Well, now no one's going to go in, but Grant, no one can see the very impressive cross-platforming
No one can say
gesture.
The horrible corporate buzzword hand motions you're doing there.
I know.
We're going to go cross-platform and shift some paradigms, and then...
You look like you're surfing.
And then
your cross-platform motion
surfing
is like riding
various,
a wakeboard.
He's surfing across various brand alliances.
I'm just trying to keep my balance here. It's getting a bit steamy in this studio. It's like the old days all over again. Grant, you've just come back from vacation, but do you have anything in the works for Canadian soccer news?
I seem to be going on a lot of those. I'm going to continue the CONCACAF Diaries. With Canadian soccer news.
All right.
So, I mean, I don't have anything, you know, right ready to promote right now, but keep going back as you all normally.
Would you just, wait.
Yeah, just, it's coming down the pipe. Don't worry.
Well-oiled pipe.
Well-oiled pipe.
Stop saying that.
CONCACAF Diaries, that's just things related to Canada's upcoming opponents in World Cup qualifying, which kicks off this June.
Sweet. And I, of course, will also be adding some things to CanadianSoccerNews.com in the days and weeks and months and probably years ahead, as will many other good contributors. So for whatever you would need related to this kind of area, head over to CanadianSoccerNews.com. You can also follow the lot of us on Twitter for updates and nonsense and other crap. Jamie, what is your Twitter handle?
Doyle, @Doyle_Jamie.
Oh, Grant?
S-C-G Grant.
And I'm @Daniel Squizzato. Yeah. Jamie, can you spell it?
I can, but I'm not going to because it's unnecessary.
DanielSquizzato. 2 Z's, 1 T. People may not know otherwise. I need to tell them. We'll be yammering at you again sometime next week. Until then, we are, as always, some Canadian guys talking about soccer.